Chapter 59. The Rubber Solution. Molly opened the door warily.
"Oh, miss, he's as cross as a pancake," she whispered.
Molly's whispers could have been heard in the gallery of any music hall on a bawdy Saturday night.
"But why?" I whispered back. "Miss,"
she hissed, like the Flying Scotsman.
"He'll hear you."
"Why is he angry?" I asked quietly, and Molly flapped her arms.
"I don't not know."
She looked over her shoulder nervously.
"But he showed me his teeth and threatened to increase my wages."
She struggled to remember the word.
"Froth width."
"But that means you are getting more money," I explained.
"Oh!"
Molly's mouth drooped even further.
"But then I'll have to go out and spend it and be married by wicked Sir Jasper."
"Sir Jasper is a made-up person, Molly."
"I could see he was made up," she rejoined. "I was right on the front row, at the front, and I could see his red cheeks running down his neck in the heat of the slime lights. But he was still wicked, and oh, poor sweet Miss Clara was..."
"What did you do?" I broke in before I heard the entire plot of The Farmer's Daughter for the eighth time.
"Well, what could I do?" she reasoned. "I just sat there and sissed every time he came on."
I tried again. "What did you do to make Mr. Grice raise your pay?" Molly screwed up her apron and chewed the hem.
"I just only told him that those things with what he was playing with looked like those toads what had been squashed and couldn't be unsquashed again after I stood on them. And then he got all different and told me I was a stoot. And I said I didn't not know what a stoot was, and he laughed. Heavens below, it was terrifying, miss. He laughed like a person, and then he said he was going to do that thing to my wages, what I never get anyway, with breaking things and swearing. I ran out of the room and didn't not come back until he rang his bell for tea immediately after, and now I have to go to the fishmonger's."
"But why?" We both knew that her master would not allow fish in the house.
"On an errand."
Molly watched me hang up my own bonnet and roll my parasol and put it in the stand. "Then you had better do it."
"Yes,"
she agreed. Molly stood like a monument. I went round her and into the study, which might have survived an invasion by the Goths, but only just. Sidney Grice had his coat off and his sleeves rolled up and his cravat pulled open. His face was splattered with something resembling cement, and there was something pink clinging in plaques to his waistcoat. "I have an idea," I told him, my excitement deflated like one of Molly's unfortunate toads.
"Good, good," he replied distractedly. "In the meantime..."
He indicated the carnage on his desk, mixing bowls half full, some tipped over, clogged up test tubes, spatulas caked in assorted crusts.
"I have had a better one. I have made alginate impressions of both pieces of shot and used those to make precise gypsum replicas of them."
He pointed to two large watch glasses, each bearing the now familiar lumps, one whiter than, but apparently identical to, the original grey version. Apart from being attached by a blob of yellow wax to a wide-bored glass pipe, with an L-turn at the end.
"So as to avoid abrading or scratching the actual specimens. I have been obliged to deface these models, but I intend to make 19 copies of each specimen and insert my glass pipe into a different position every time."
He paused and looked at me as if expecting a ripple of applause.
"And now?"
"You are going to coat them with rubber solution," I chipped in, as he paused again for the ovation that was never to come.
"You guessed."
"It was also my idea."
"It was mine first."
He had a beaker of water simmering on a tripod over a spirit burner. "What time did you have your idea?"
"At 14 minutes after the hour of 2 post-meridian."
"That was before mine," I admitted. "But then I did not have the benefit of Molly's technical advice."
My guardian bridled. "If you are to laud that calamitous dolt of a skivvy for unwittingly triggering my genius, you might as well credit an apple for the discovery of gravity. Though the fruit probably has a greater intellect than the maid."
"Shall we do one each?" I suggested. and he brought his sense of effrontery under control.
"Very well."
He swept aside an assortment of his equipment, with no concern for what was shattering or spilling or crashing to the floor. Mr. G brought out a large brown bottle and removed the cork bung, and, like a genie, the smell uncoiled, an invisible cloud filling the room with its fumes. I coughed.
"Shall I pull up the sash?"
The only time I had ever done so in the study before was to clear the air of cyanide coming from the corpse at my feet.
"Certainly not."
Mr. G handed me a new stiff-bristled paintbrush.
"An open window is far too much temptation to a mischievous ragamuffin with a ready supply of sun-baked horse droppings at his feet. Besides which,"
Mr. G inhaled, as if it were sea air, and he were taking a cure,
"I find it rather invigorating."
He started to paint his plaster model, the thick black liquid dripping over his already filthy blotter, and I joined in. "How thick do you want it?"
1/16 of an inch.
He waved his brush, showering his bookcase like a priest with holy water, but fortunately failing to bless me. We painted steadily and soon had two glistening blobs like shriveled toffee apples on the sticks. I rotated mine.
"How long does it take to dry?"
I was pleased to see that there were no air holes while Mr. G was dabbing some more on one spot.
"According to my earlier experiments, approximately 15 minutes. Keep turning or it will sag."
"So I have to stand for all that time just waiting for it to dry?" I was getting bored already.
"Of course not."
He held his up like a lollipop, but did not lick it.
"You must wait for the latex to coagulate at the same time."
I shifted my weight. That makes the process so much more interesting.
"Indeed."
My guardian clipped on his pince-nez with his left hand and watched the process avidly.
"Did we finish our light chat about the differential identification of rodential earwax?"
"We did not," I confessed.
"Shall I resume my diatribe?"
"Not unless you wish to induce rigor mortis." My godfather considered my proposal.
"I do not,"
he decided regretfully.
"What would you like to talk about?"
"Something that doesn't involve murder."
"Everything involves murder."
"Music does not."
"Leaving aside the hundreds of operas which depict violent deaths and the number of composers who have killed or been killed illegally, music is murder."
I considered and rejected poetry, art, and flower pressing. No doubt he would know of a homicidal collector of omnibus tickets, or all about the massacre of a conference of beekeepers.
"Keep turning it," he said.
I never stopped.
"I did not say you had."
"That is like me telling you to keep breathing."
"Useful advice if I were in a room which I believe to be full of toxic gases, but you knew not to be."
I dabbed a puddle on the leather top, peeling it off and turned it over. It was dry. My guardian prodded it with a silver toothpick. "So what do we do now?" I asked.
"We exhale."
He put the pipe to his lips and blew. With his cheeks puffed out, he was all at once a child blowing bubbles. I tried mine. The rubber was much less stretchy than I had expected. Perhaps my latex was too thick, for I could feel my eardrums bulge as I struggled to expand it. But at last I had something resembling a ball. "That was more difficult than I expected," I puffed.
"And now you must do it again."
Whilst mine had deflated to a large prune, Mr. G had a finger over the end of his glass pipe to stop the same happening. "But it will happen to yours the moment you let go," I prophesied. Sidney Grice pfft. He had 5 different pfs, and this was his least dismissive one.
"But I shall not let go."
He sidled along his side of the desk and lowered his ball into the beaker of bubbling water.
"Until it has hardened."
The water splashed over a stack of calculations, but that did not seem to perturb my godfather, so intent was he on his task. I reinflated mine and slipped a finger into my mouth this time. Mr. G removed the ball, letting it drip over an open Latin dictionary where I could just make out decollavi, which even I knew meant beheaded, underlined in red ink. He pricked at the rubber.
"Huzzah!"
He spoke quietly, an uncharacteristically military ejaculation from a man who had never been in uniform.
"What now?"
he challenged, and I realized that I had not thought beyond this stage and that all the information we needed was inside our creations.
"Well,"
I immersed my balloon before it had a chance to lose any air, "we cut them in half, turn them inside out, and glue them back together."
"What an ingeniously stupid idea."
I tried but failed to hide my indignation.
"What then?"
"We pour melted wax inside."
"Well, that goes without saying."
"Clearly,"
he murmured, slotting a funnel over the end of the tube.
"Whilst the pipe is still warm."
He took a stick of white modelling wax, held the end of it above the flame, and removed it to drip into the funnel and trickle down into the ball.
"Take yours out and hold this in the water."
I did as I was bid, so that only the funnel projected above the surface. Mr. G repeated the process.
"Another 80 or 90 applications should suffice,"
he calculated. My hand was already uncomfortably warm and my sleeve damp with steam.
"I have a quicker way," I said, inspired by my own discomfort. "If you put the wax into a syringe and heat that, then you should be able to inject the wax straight in. It would be quicker and you are less likely to trap any air bubbles."
"Why, March," Sidney Grice bobbed behind his desk, "your technical advice is almost as good as Molly's."
"I have never met a man more adept at turning a compliment into an insult," I complained as he yanked open a lower drawer.
"I am not convinced."
He rose, as if on a lift, "that such a man exists." My guardian waved a syringe, probably the same one he had used to inject me once, pulled the plunger out, and forced two sticks of wax into the chamber. 2 or 3 minutes later, he had the ball filled.
"And here comes that bootless lumpen wench."
The front door crashed open and closed, and then the one into the study, and Molly lumbered in, laden with an iron bucket.
"Sorry, sir, but he wouldn't not let me have any ice without buying an eel, so I had to stop on the way back and eat it."
"You ate raw fish?" I questioned, and Molly guffawed.
"Oh, bless you, miss, they ain't not fishes. Eels are snakes, and snakes are always raw. I've seen them at the zoo."
She looked down.
"And now most of the ice has vanished, like the invisible elephant I saw in Hyde Park last year."
"Put it on my desk."
Molly hauled her load up.
"Oh, sorry, miss, a teeny big lot of it jumped onto your old dress."
It was a new dress, and I was about to tell her so, and that I was soaked to the skin, but her master smiled magnanimously.
"Oh, don't worry about that."
He dipped his rubber ball into the icy water.
"Just run along and make some tea."
Molly curtsied like a puppet whose strings have become tangled before she departed, while Mr. G swirled the ball around, untroubled by the clinking of ice against the sides of the bucket.
"That should do it."
Sidney Grice whipped a cutthroat razor out of the air and ran the blade rapidly round the ball.
"The time of truth."
He peeled the rubber apart to reveal a perfect white sphere.
"And now for the other one."
I went upstairs to change into something dry, and whilst I was there, I smoked a cigarette out of the window, overlooking the courtyard garden. By the time I returned, Sidney Grice had 2 wax balls on a bed of cotton wool, beneath 2 magnifying glasses on brass stands, on the round central table, the only uncluttered surface in the room now.
"Take a look at this, March,"
he invited me eagerly, and I stood over them. "They look very similar to me. Which is which?" Sidney Grice pointed.
"This is my replica of the ball, which, if we are to believe that grotesquerie of a medical student, came from Wallace's cranium, and this your inferior attempt from your handbag."
"Why inferior?" I bristled.
"Because it is over-inflated."
"How do you know that yours is not under-inflated?" I asked, knowing full well he would have an answer.
"Because mine is a .452 caliber, the same bore as Schlangazan's weapon, which I ascertained by the simple means of inserting my index finger into the barrel. And a man who does not know the exact dimensions of all his digits might as well fritter away his life performing charitable deeds. Whereas yours is .63, not a bore which has been used since bores have been calibrated."
"And I bet you were one of the first." I muttered, adding more loudly. So do they match up?
Judge for yourself.
Mr. G traced the course of a long scratch on the first ball with his silver toothpick, a fraction of an inch above it. The line curved one way and then the other, then split and rejoined before breaking up into a delta. I looked at the second ball, and it had been scored in exactly the same way.
There are 9 other abrasions which match, or will, when I devise a method of making these replicas exactly the same diameter,
Sidney Grice forecast. I rotated the balls on their glass pipes. There is a large gouge in my one which I cannot see in the other, I observed.
I would be desolate if there were not many marks which did not match,
he told me.
For one ball passed through hair, skin, skull, meninges, and brain tissues, whereas the other penetrated the tanned and dyed hide of a cow.
I completed the list for him, my handbag, cigarette case, and hip flask.
Which is bound to create other blemishes, he said,
oblivious to my sense of outrage. So you can prove that Johnny Wallace was killed by Prince Ulrich's air gun, I concluded.
Indeed.
He viewed the mess of materials on his shirt sleeve with a wounded sigh.
It might be slightly more difficult to prove that the prince himself fired the rifle, but, bearing in mind the way he tries to avoid putting his weight onto his left toes, I would like to be granted a viewing of his naked foot.
When he was running across the ceiling, I had noticed the way the prince walked, but was not about to admit that I had thought nothing of it.
Possibly.
Sidney Grice placed his hands together in a namaste Hindu greeting pose.
But no jury would convict on such esoteric evidence.
He scraped some plaster off his cufflink.
Incidentally, you have a speck of rubber on your collar.
Then why go to all this trouble? I demanded. At least I do not have any in my hair.
And I hope that is of consolation to you.
He tilted his head back to look at the ceiling.
Because we have come into possession of something more precious than money or tea itself. The truth, March. I know it, you know it, and I shall make sure that His Illustrious Highness, Prince Ulrich Albrecht Sigismund Schlangezahn, knows it.
He glanced in the mirror.
Oh,
he said.
I see what you mean.